Yeah, boy. Big Doug Walter.
Too much vaping, even, man. Too much vaping. That you should have got way more out of that. Weak lungs.
That wasn't even 100% of my power. Oh, yeah. I just didn't want to, you know, be here for an hour and a half. I wanted to actually top hoops. But Big Doug Walter, my Doug, Jordan Flegel, giving you just a sneak peek on my longest yeah boy ever. We stay very topical with all of our references. Hope everybody enjoys that. But here with my boy, Jordan Flegel, as he sucks down a 7.8 out of 10 Pilsner.
That's what I give this.
Locally, locally produced. And we got a lot to talk about here, Jordan. Two teams already punching their tickets to the conference finals, as well as a game seven to preview in the Western Conference. And, you know, maybe predictions on a second game seven to come. But a lot has gone down since we last recorded on Monday there, Jordan. But one thing I forgot to mention on Monday that it's still relevant. I mean, everything's, the dust has settled. Things have turned out okay in this situation. I can't be too frustrated, but I did tell you off air because I forgot to mention it. To whoever backed into my fucking car and I now have to get the front end replaced, mark your fucking days, buddy. Count them down. If I find your ass, you're done. I know what you drive. I'm going to hunt you down.
It's like I said, that man in the video, you better start changing your ways or changing your name. Matt is coming for you, whoever you are. Mm-hmm. He'll probably just tickle you. I don't know what you would do to them, Matt.
Yes. I think that actually would be worse than being beat. If someone just forcefully pins you down and tickles you into submission, probably piss yourself.
Yeah. No, that'd be rough. But yeah, I hope you find them. That sucks, man. I mean, I was talking about car troubles not that long ago on this podcast. That's the ultimate car trouble. You're sorting it out. You've got the insurance and everything. You're good. Mm-hmm. You're going to be fine.
Yeah, luckily it's worked out. Still have that that claim through, though. Hopefully the police can do justice and exact it, but I don't think
they're known for that.
Which is, exactly. It's true. But yeah, what the hell did they drive? A GMC to Canyon, I think.
Oh, it was a
like
truck.
That. I don't know.
It was a truck.
Oh, yeah, it was a big. Oh, it's big.
You sure you
want
to tango with this guy, man?
Yes, because they're probably gonna be 5'7" and it'll be like I'll throw one fucking spinning elbow and fall over and then hopefully onto them and then they'll be pinned to the ground.
Nice.
And then I can go tickle away.
Yeah, go tickle.
But what hasn't been a tickle fight, it's been a dog fight, Jordan, has been the series between the Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. A crazy game six. Looked like the Thunder potentially were gonna be able to pull off that upset on the road. But the Nuggets, huge third quarter run to close out the quarter, and they never looked back in the fourth, taking the impressive and quite emphatic 119-107 victory as we now approach a game seven in Oklahoma City, a crazy venue for an event like that. You know that crowd is going to be nuts. They were really going crazy in game five, and I believe this is your exact prediction of how the series would go, Jordan.
It is.
Going to seven. I think I might have given it six, so a little off there. We both did originally have the Thunder taking the win here, Jordan. But I got to say, I'm wavering more and more with my Thunder championship pick as every single Thunder game goes on. They are still an amazing team. They are still, a bona fide contender. But I got to say, I feel like the Nuggets are way more comfortable in these high pressure situations. The guys over there, they know what they have to do. They want to step up. Whereas the Thunder, it just seems like a lot of these guys are going through the motions. They're kind of playing with the same, ferocity and pace they did in the regular season. And that scares me a little bit when you're looking down the barrel of a game seven. Even if you're at home, if you get punched in the mouth a couple times, it might be tough for this team to come back against a Denver Nuggets team that has came, saw, and conquered and gone all the way to the NBA Finals before with this main core. But I think that this is a the upset is there. The potential is there. I'm still rocking with the Thunder, but this is going to be a barn burner of a game seven.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, just overall, glad we get a guaranteed game seven in this round. By the time you're listening to this.
Only one last round, too, with the Nuggets.
Yeah, true. Yeah, the Nuggets, people have been pointing out, the Nuggets, for whatever reason, since they got good with Jokic, have been in a shitload of game sevens. You think back to that one with the Trailblazers. I think they were in one with the Spurs. Then a couple in the bubble, I think, because, they
Lakers.
Came back. I think it was the Clippers one when they came back, and that Jazz series.
So
they've just going back years. They've been in a bunch. Obviously, last year they lose to the Wolves at home in Game 7, which was sort of part of the reason why I didn't. I picked the Nuggets in the series at the beginning of it with the Clippers, but when it was going to Game 7, I was like, I'm pretty sure these guys aren't going to lose at home 2 years in a row in a deciding game. I don't know how to feel about this one though, because even though I did say Thunder in seven, like you said, sort of as my prediction, I imagined it would be more of a sort of Denver just dragging wins out, like by the skin of their teeth, like just getting these great Jokic performances and then just being completely exhausted by the end, and OKC just having that little bit of pop left at home with their younger, deeper team to go and just run them out of the court. Like I run them off the court. I thought maybe if it got to Game 7, I'd feel good about OKC winning it. But now, like you said, I'm thinking about it, and it's like this series has been a lot closer than I predicted it would be. Just sort of,
well, they had the lead in the fourth quarter in Game 5 too. Like this series could have been already wrapped up.
100%. And the game they played at home, I guess that was Game 4, where they could have gone up 3-1 in the series. Like there's been, I just think the Thunder, like you said, have been really more shaky than I thought they've been, and have looked way more uncomfortable in a lot of these spots. And they've won because they're dominant defensively, and they've got enough wins here to, you know, through their three wins so far. They've had SGA have just enough moments, but like these teams have looked quite evenly matched. And if you're going to go into a seventh game thinking they're evenly matched, how can you not pick Jokic and Murray and all these guys who have literally won a championship and have these, you know, these veterans? Like you go down the list, like we just talked about last podcast, even SGA, the front runner for MVP, who I would pick for MVP this year, as we both did, I believe. Like he doesn't have that much playoff experience even himself. Like all of these guys just have not done it yet. And you have to take that into account. That's a big reason why I thought the Nuggets could sort of push them there, but I did think that the Nuggets would, I thought the Thunder would feel like, okay, yeah, maybe we let a few games slip away here, but we're clearly the better team. I don't think they've proven themselves as clearly the better team, and that's also saying something too with how much deeper they are than the Nuggets. Like that Nuggets starting five is so much more synergistic and so much more sort of cohesive, and you can trust what they do game to game, whereas OKC, you never really know what you're going to get from guys down from SGA. Like Jalen Williams, is he going to have a good game? Is Chet going to have a good game? You know, all these guys, like, is Caruso going to hit enough shots? Because you want him out there, obviously, for the defense. Same thing with Lu Dort. There's just all these question marks. Whereas Denver, like, you know what you're going to get mainly from those top, you know, four or five guys. I know Jamal Murray's been a bit up and down, but you kind of take that with him. But Aaron Gordon, you know he's going to be solid. At this point, you even know a guy like Christian Brown is going to be solid. Michael Porter Jr., also a little bit up and down, but, like, you know, his highs are pretty high. Yeah, he hasn't been great. To be fair, though, he's clearly fucking hurt, and he's playing with, like, one shoulder in this one. But I just the championship DNA is clearly still there. So I don't know. I want to stick with my original pick, but I am feeling if I'm a Thunder fan, I'm incredibly, incredibly nervous that this has gone to a Game 7. I think all the pressure is going to be on the Thunder. They're a 68-win team. Again, like I said, going into this series, Denver's playing with house money. A lot of people picked them to lose in the first round. The fact that they pushed it this far, and all you need is one more good game. If you know that Jokic in his head, he just needs one more good performance to push this over the top. I give Denver a really good chance. The argument for the Thunder, though, is kind of like what I had thought would happen, is they are just going to be fresher. They are going to be able to come and summon a lot of energy from that crowd. And if they can harness that in a positive way and really just fucking dig down defensively, plug all the holes, be flying around and get out and run, then I could see a situation where they jump out to a big lead and it's just too insurmountable for the Nuggets. But I don't know. I'd stay away from this if I was betting. I'm leaning Nuggets. I'm leaning that they can. I'm not quite ready to fully jump out of my pick because I want to be proven right here. But I'm terrified if I'm a Thunder fan. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's just crazy to me too when you look at this series and, you know, really the Nuggets season as a whole. Obviously, heavily reliant on that starting five, and then really it was only Russell Westbrook getting any minutes off the bench. This is the first game in the series that they've really given, you know, somewhat like actual rotational minutes to Strother.
Strother's got to be out there now, I think, if he can do this.
And he was hot. Yep. 15 points, 4-for-8 shooting, including 3 triples. Like, that's the difference between winning and losing for this team.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it kind of comes along with, you know, Peyton Watson having been fucking goddamn awful in the playoffs, 1-for-7 in this last game. But again, still chipped in 13 minutes. Like, just getting some more, you know, fresher legs, some more rotational minutes in there just to give your guys some rest. Like, Jokic was actually able to rest up quite a few minutes coming into that fourth quarter. So something that they haven't had that luxury of doing before. If they can just, you know, keep that depth, trust Strother, trust Watson, and try and develop them a little bit even into the playoffs and just letting them get some run, get some some shots up, I think that's going to serve them really well in the long term, but also obviously in the short term right now of just getting things going, because Westbrook also hasn't been producing very well.
Yeah,
in the
he's been bad
games, so
yeah.
they need to find some kind of resource off the bench for them. But really, that is going to tell, like, that's going to dictate this game. Like, you know what you're getting, like you said, from the starting five typically and overall production. It's really going to come down to how the bench of this Nuggets team performs if they're going to get the win in Game 7. So that's a lot of pressure to be putting on a second unit going into a Game 7 on the road. So that really makes me kind of sway towards the Thunder still here going into that big game on Saturday night. But the other part of it that I want to touch on here is I like the depth, obviously, the Thunder. It's one of the reasons that they were the best team in the NBA throughout the regular season. But they got to cut down this rotation, and they got to just ride out their guys in this Game 7. There's no more of this 10-man rotation. You got to cut that shit down to like 8-9 if you're really wanting to play with fire. Like, there's no reason that in this game...
9 might not even... Like, 7 or 8, maybe. I mean, that's what you normally have in this point in the playoffs.
Well, it's just crazy to me that there is 4 guys on the Thunder that played more than the highest minute getter... Or, sorry, 4 guys on the Nuggets that played more than the highest minute getter in the Thunder in Game 5, or Game 6, pardon me. And like SGA, he had 32 points and 6 assists in 34 minutes. Give that guy 40 minutes.
Yep.
He's athletic enough. He's in good enough shape. He's
these
young.
These guys are young. Play. All these guys are young.
Yeah, he can play. Chet Holmgren, 30 minutes. Like the highest minutes getter in this Game 6, which is my other point that I want to talk about in this one, is Jalen Williams, who has been fucking atrocious offensively. Like, playmaking has been solid, and he's still a reliable defender. But Mark Dagnall has to set him aside and say, you know what, man? Like, you have to stop just shooting at all, unless it's a wide open layup or dunk. Like, you have to limit your shooting, because right now he's doing the Thunder a disservice by even trying to do anything. He was 3-for-16 overall in Game 6, and for the series, just want to read off a couple stats here. He's shooting 33%. From the floor right now in the second round, 21% from 3. Like, that is absolutely terrible. Still averaging 1.5 turnovers, 16.5 points overall. A major drop off, 5 points less than we had in the regular season. Like, this just has not been his series. He wasn't amazing in the first round. Had his moments, but I mean, that was also against a Grizzlies team that just didn't want to be there. So I think that you look kind of over at who should be looked at as like that top second option on the Thunder, and it's like Chet needs to be more aggressive. Like, he has actually, when he's wanted to go out there and hunt his own shot, he's been an okay 3-point shooter. But just go down low and hammer Jokic. Like, that's the one thing that pisses me off so much when I watch modern NBA still. Like, people don't like foul baiting, and I'm not saying this is even a foul bait, but like, force Jokic into these uncomfortable situations. You have Holmgren and Hartenstein. Just take it into him. Take it right into his chest. Jalen Williams, with a Y, has been playing solid minutes off the bench for them. So even if for some reason you get called for offensive fouls and things don't shake out, you still have a reliable backup second option to kind of play some of those big rotational minutes. But Jokic has never been this amazing defender. I know there's metrics that say, oh, he's actually a good presence. I think people just don't take it into the paint hard enough on him. And you like, I genuinely think these guys are athletic enough, they're big enough, and they're long enough that they can draw fouls and put Jokic into foul trouble. Like, what the hell are they going to do? They're going to fucking put DeAndre Jordan out there to play big minutes? Zeke Nnaji, Dario Saric? Like, none of those guys are going to be able to do anything in this series. So I would really, like, I don't know why this hasn't been a strategy from the get-go. But yeah, give it to Chet. make him attack Jokic, try and get some kind of a foul drawn, or even then, he's more athletic, he's bigger. Like, he should be able to finish over Jokic anyways. So I just want him to be more traditional, be a more aggressive big man, and I think that, you know, the good things will come. Because, again, with the rate that they've been scoring at, there's no reason that Jalen Williams should be taking any more shots than Chet. So, yeah, increase those minutes and, yeah, decrease Williams' shots, increase Chet's, and I think that's your winning formula here for the Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, there's the shots from the field for Jalen Williams, too. In this last game, he didn't get to the free throw line once, not one attempt attempted. Like, that's unacceptable.
There wasn't a lot of free throws to go around at all other than SGA. He was the only guy who shot more than three.
Yeah. And so the Thunder, again, I think they've kind of shrunk away a lot of times in these games, in this series. They've looked like a team that's a little bit rattled and not quite ready to be there, specifically in this game. Like, it felt very much like, okay, we know we have game seven at home. We're not even, you know, we're not going to expend ourselves too much, especially in that second half. And yeah, Jalen Williams, like, I do think it's important for him to stay aggressive, because again, if he tampers it down and you don't get that production from Chet, then you are really just relying on SGA the entire time. He can't do it himself. And that's, again, it's a very similar thing to how we felt about the Cavs, how we've talked about them a lot this year, the similarities between these two teams, you know, as the best teams in their conference. You know, they're very clear, like, that this whole deep rotation, we're going to move the ball around, we're going to get one guy to whoever's open is going to take and hit a shot, does not work. Throw that all out in the playoffs. Like, that does not matter anymore. It matters what you do in these type of situations and these type of series. And Jalen Williams, it really, I honestly feel for him that he's having such a sort of not inspired series this year, because he was really, really bad in that Mavericks series last year where they had home court advantage and they lost in that one. And I think he put a lot of work in and came back as a better overall player and had a super, like, just a great regular season. Like, he was a no-brainer All-NBA pick for me. So it sort of pains me to watch him struggle like this again. And I don't want him to, if I'm the Thunder, I don't want him to fully, like, lose his confidence. But you're right. If he's taking 16 shots from the field and so is SGA, let's adjust that a little bit. SGA can play more minutes. He can shoot more. And just make more things happen through SGA, I would say. Like, if you're running the pick and roll, like, with one of the bigs, like, that's where you can get Chet more shots on pick and pops or pick and rolls. Like, there's more good things that can happen through that rather than just expecting Jalen Williams, who hasn't shown it at this level yet, to sort of go and make something happen on his own. And like you said, this just hasn't been his series, and it might not be at the end of the day. He can still contribute in other ways on the boards, you know, defensively. You know, he's still been solid. But yeah, I agree that it's sort of on Chet to sort of fill that void. But again, with Chet, I felt he's played kind of soft in a lot of these series. Like, you're telling him go into Jokic. Jokic has kind of abused him anytime he's been on him. Like, Chet's held up okay some of the time, but still, Jokic can pretty easily just back him down, score over him. Even freaking Hartenstein hasn't been great on him. Like, honestly, the Thunder have had more success when they fucking throw Caruso or Lou Dort or Jalen Williams on him, like, you know, and sort of bug him with a smaller guy kind of smacking at the ball and getting it up into him.
Traditional bigs have historically been cooked by Jokic. I mean, you look back, like, who would have thought Karl Anthony Towns would be the Jokic stopper when you have Rudy Gobert right next to him?
Yeah, exactly. So you know, the Chet piece of it too, like, I don't want to keep going over it again and again, but the people who are sort of on in the camp of the Thunder aren't experienced yet. They haven't been there. They don't know what they're doing. Like, Chet and Jalen Williams, they're great young players. They're still young. Like, that's the important thing. Yeah. They haven't been through the fucking battles. For both of those guys in different ways, you've clearly seen that in this series. You know, I don't know how much of the game plan the Thunder can sort of change on the fly in one game here. I think you're saying shorten up the rotation. I agree, but I don't know if Dagnall's going to do that by that much. Like, I still think he counts on these guys coming in, depending on if Jalen Williams is having a good game or, you know, the Dort factor, all this different stuff. He counts on this 9-man rotation, but it's true. Like, is that going to fucking bite him in the end? Because in a game seven, some game sevens, it really only matters what fucking the top six guys are doing, like, let alone seven, eight, nine, like, you can have a really, really short rotation, and it probably will be. So if you're Dagnall and you're trying to balance these things and you're just throwing in these guys, you know, the Aaron Wigginses of the world and Cason Wallace's, who, again, are great players, but still not a lot of like vets on that side of things. If you're going, putting that sort of formula up against the proven championship rotation that we know that Denver has, like David Adelman doesn't have a lot of decisions to make. I think that's the sort of best case for him. Like he has to worry about his guys running out of gas and fucking Michael Porter Jr.'s arm falling off. But otherwise, he knows who he's going to be playing. He knows who's going to be out there in the big moments. You know, he can give Strother a try, see if he has it that day. Same with Peyton Watson and Russ. You know, he'll be on a short leash because, you know, Russ, especially when he gets overexcited, can do more things to hurt you than to help you. But like, he knows what he's doing. Dagnall, I don't know if he's going to have the balls to say, you know what? No, we're going with these top seven guys. Because the thing is, I don't think he fully knows who his top seven guys are night to night. Like it's kind of changed. And again, that's good in the regular season to have all those guys that you can rotate through. In the playoffs, it turns into more of a bad leaning problem. So I'm interested to see that point, you know, from that vantage point, how things go. But like ultimately it's just going to come down to which sort of three best players on each given team play better. Like if you get a Jalen Williams game where he's actually being efficient, continues to impact the game as a passer. Like you said, he had 10 assists in that last game. You know, that was pretty much the only bright spot of his game. And if you can have Chet, you know, do what he does as well, you know, when he's been on in this series, then the Thunder have a great chance. And on the other side, like Jokic, if he's going to just be unstoppable and you get some contributions from some of these other Nuggets, like that's also just hard to beat. Because also Jamal Murray, we know he's up and down. That's been the story of his whole career. He had a great game in game six. He looked really good.
Awesome.
And if he can, and that's him, you know, apparently being dealing with a little bit of an illness. He was questionable going into this one. If he can rest up and have another game like that, then you got to like the Nuggets' chances. But like, you know, not to be simplistic, it's about who hits shots and who plays better. So that's going to be it coming down the stretch here. But we talked about the sphincter-meter, you know, zooming in on how tight the assholes are. It's all the pressures on the Thunder in this one.
Yeah, 100%. And we will see whose sphincters are quite the tightest when we get there. Because
Jokic
on Sunday
is loose.
Night.
You know Jokic is loose. Uh-oh. You know Jamal Murray is
loose. Booty hole. I do also want to just say this. This is fucking egregious. 3:30 tip-off for a game seven?
Yeah, I don't know
spot
why.
Spot in the conference finals on the line. Adam Silver, I swear to fucking God, we're going to talk about you
it's
in a
like
little
the,
bit
the
here.
It's like the Raptors in the first round back in the day. It'd be on NBA TV, start at noon. Mm-hmm. It's like, how am I supposed to get hyped for this?
I'm not kidding, man. If I ever see that bald-headed freak, I'm punching him. I'm hitting him, and he's got a bird chest.
I'm giving him a wedgie.
It'll go right through him. Yeah, it's atomic. Put it over his fucking head. Yeah, sure. Those things probably stretch. They look like they're stretchy. But we'll keep a close eye on that Game 7 upcoming this weekend. And, of course, next episode of Big Dog Ball Talk, we will be recapping and previewing the conference finals.
Crazy.
The Game 7 on Sunday will wrap up. And, you know, but we will probably end up recording and releasing on Tuesday if this series goes to 7. But if not, you know, as recording this, Friday afternoon, tonight, this evening, game 6 in MSG, spot in the conference finals on the line. The New York Knicks up 3-2. I mean, let's talk about it just to lead off here, Jordan, because it ended up happening, you know, after we recorded. Jason Tatum out for the season with that ruptured Achilles. You hate to see it. One of the best talents in the NBA, you know, has played the most playoff games of any player since, I believe, like 2018, which is, you know, I think we've talked about it before that he is probably like the most overhated player in the NBA at this point. Like he is just consistently awesome. You know, he is obviously with some of his faults, you know, in big game scenarios and situations at times. But I mean, the guy has been a borderline 30 point per game scorer for the last 4 or 5 years. He's been to the finals twice and won once. And I don't think anyone can really take any of that away from him. And now, you know, you look at the Celtics, they're relying on Jaylen Brown to step up and be that alpha dog for the first time in his career to really have to carry the load. And then you're looking for more output from everybody else. But luckily, the Celtics are a super deep team. And, you know, we're going to focus on their playoffs because this offseason is going to be a tough one because chances are Tatum is not going to be back till, you know, after the All-Star break next season. So the Celtics are going to be without him, not just for the playoff run, but all of next season, or at least a good chunk of next season, depending on how the surgery and rehab goes for Tatum. But thoughts out to him. But yeah, the Celtics depth in this one, I mean, as we expected, you know, in, you know, TD Garden, the Celtics came out fighting, and the big dog of this one, easily, by far. Luke Kornet off the bench, man. What a fucking game from the Honky, man. Almost double-doubles, 10 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 blocks. I would actually, you know what I'm going to say? That was almost a triple-double with blocks.
Yep.
Like, insane game for him. I don't think that he can count on him for another double-double off the bench. I mean, he might even be starting because Kristaps, I don't see any injury designations on him right now.
Apparently.
But he's dealing with some, crazy some illness as well. Not sure what's going on with that bronchitis maybe the COVID-22. I don't know if that's dropped. maybe he's getting the sneak peek of it. The Celtics depth still is there. And, you know, when I watched that game 5, like, this was the Knicks for the taking. It was close in the first half, and then the Celtics really just started to run away with it. And maybe, you know, it was the home crowd. Maybe they were motivated with, Tatum being out, and they wanted to get that one for him. For me, like, I just watched it, and I'm like, the Knicks don't want it that bad. They really don't seem like they want it that bad. They don't have that killer instinct, and that is scary because, you know, you go back to MSG, if things get close down the, butt-puckering time in the fourth quarter and crunch time, if it's close, I'm still taking the Celtics team to beat the Knicks in a matchup that's close with it or without Jason Tatum because Jaylen Brown had an awesome game, 12 assists, stepping up there as that lead ball handler in game 5. And then you still have Drew Holiday and Derek White, who are, you know, the best defensive backcourt in the league. Jalen Brunson had a mediocre game. OG Anunoby is a coin toss on, you know, what the hell he's going to look like. He's horrible in this one. 1 for 12.
As a Raptors fan, I'm not surprised at all by people in the media are like, what happened to OG Anunoby? Well, it's like, I'm not surprised.
This is what you get. It's the OG Anunoby experience. You're getting it all streamlined for you. And then same thing you could only say with Mikal Bridges. Sometimes he looks amazing like he did in the first couple games. And now here he is 4 for 14. I think, the 2 of the 4 shots were like in the first like 3 minutes of the game. So again, this is my long-winded way of saying, Jordan, I initially was like coming into game 5, I'm like, the Knicks could wrap it up. But looking at how lackadaisical they were and how they just didn't really want it that badly, I think they're going to choke this. I think they're going to blow the 3-1 lead, and I think that the Celtics are going to end up pulling this out. And when we talk
the series or the game? Listeners,
the series, the whole thing. I think they're going to win. I mean, dude, if it goes back to TD Garden game 7, the Knicks are going to crumble. They're going to lose.
Yeah.
The Knicks are going to nick.
Yeah, well, part of me agrees with you, and I can see this happening 100% because, again, the Celtics, it's not like they're a bad team without Jason Tatum. And in a way, the Celtics are actually like, I mean, this sounds counterintuitive, but they're like, to me, they feel like such a good team that they almost need some adversity to sort of wake them up, to remind them like how good they are. Normally, it's like it was against fucking Miami. When Miami made that run to the finals in 2023, like the Celtics were technically a better team than them. They kept doing dumb 100%. Shit. I know that was they were a different team. That's back when they still had Marcus Smart. And that was a slightly or no, it wasn't. Sorry, that was the year after. Yeah. No, because. Well, Derek White was on the team. Oh, yeah. Was Derek White on the... Yeah. Sorry, I'm mixing up the trades. But
there was Marcus Smart was there.
He was there, yeah. Because
that was the... maybe was he there? I don't know. Who knows? I'm pretty sure Drew Holiday went there and they won.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah, of course. Okay, you're right. But, you know, I know that's a slightly different team, from this one. Again, Porzingis isn't there, but, you know, Porzingis isn't really contributing this year all that much, and even last year he wasn't, but basically... That since the Celtics, like that back half of that year, the year before Ime Udoka had the thing, got fired and Joe Mazzulla was brought in, when the Celtics first started like destroying people on the court, they've just had this weird thing where they need to have their backs up against the wall before they're going to play like their best basketball. And then when they're sort of front runners and expecting to win, especially at home, that's why they've been like weirdly bad at home this regular season and the last couple years in the playoffs. It's for whatever reason, they just don't do that well as like a front running team. But when they're on their back foot and people expect them to lose, that's when they play loose and they can just go out. And like you saw in this game 5, like they can patch things together even without Jason Tatum and go and win. I mean, Jaylen Brown, finals MVP last year, record, like he was great all last playoffs. He's no slouch. And in some ways,
we were talking almost triple doubles. He was only 2 rebounds off.
Yeah. And in some ways it kind of simplifies things for him. If he's like the main guy unquestionably in a game. And even for a guy like Derek White. He's kind of got to be that second scorer or, you know, second guy. I know he had more points even than Jaylen Brown in this one, but, you know, he knows that role as sort of the secondary guy. Whereas when Tatum's there and Brown's there, it's kind of like, well, I'm going to just do what I can, be that kind of glue guy, hit some shots. Like, things in a weird way are, you know, a little bit simplified, I think, for a lot of these guys. They're obviously by no stretch of the imagination better without Tatum out there, which I swear I've fucking heard from people online, which is just absolutely ludicrous. But like, it's they're not a bad or unbalanced or team that doesn't make sense now. Like they can still throw out a team there on the court where, if you're looking at them matched up against the Knicks, if everyone's on, it's actually pretty even. It obviously does hurt the Celtics to not have Porzingis as like a playable piece, because if he was that would really change the equation, I think, for me. And, you know, they've still got a bench. Luckily, Hauser is back and able to play after he dealt with that, you know, little ankle tweak or whatever it was. But I don't know. It seems to me like the reason that what you're talking about of the Knicks not really caring in this last game was more so like a respect thing for me. I think in the psyche, whether they even fucking realized
respect,
it or not,
man, it's the goddamn playoffs.
I know, I agree with you, but I think it was like, your star player just tore his fucking Achilles. You're coming back home in front of your home fans. We know you guys aren't going to want to lose in front of this in this environment. We're going to throw you a bone here, and we're not going to actually play that hard or do our best. And now maybe I'm giving the Knicks way too much credit and they were actually trying to win and they just sucked, but that was just kind of the feeling that I got. And, you know, after the Celtics,
honestly, that would explain OG Anunoby 1-for-12.
Well, this is what I mean. Like after the Celtics,
I don't know how you could shoot that badly, man.
But the Celtics blew them out in game three going into New York. And it looked like, oh, the Celtics were going to, sort of retake control of the series. You picked them to win game four. A lot of people did. Even before Tatum went down, the Knicks were going to win that game. And that's what I was looking at. I was like, the Knicks got beat so badly that I think they're going to come out in front of their home crowd and just not sort of redouble down on that sort of lackluster effort. They're going to at least come and try. And that will be enough, I think, to sort of will them over the finish line. So I think we're going to see a repeat of that going home. They've given the Celtics sort of the gift of winning one last time in front of their fans, you know, with a great game by a white guy. You know that the Celtics fans go absolutely bonkers for that. And I think, you know, it's Friday night in New York. I understand that's a lot of pressure on the Knicks to go and win. I don't think the Celtics are quite going to have enough. I think the Knicks, you're going to get a good Jalen Brunson game. One of these other guys is going to show up and they're just going to play really, really hard, because I think they know what's at stake. They know getting to the conference finals, getting the break, and, you know, we don't like to think of it this way, but Jason Tatum going out with injury is a break for the Knicks. Like they wouldn't have been able to, 100%. You know, have this type of thing handed to them where they can actually get back to a place they haven't been since 99 or whatever it is. I think they're going to take it seriously and go out and take care of business, because even though everything I just said about the Celtics still being a great team without Tatum, the Knicks have no excuse to lose this game against this team. They beat them at full strength on the road. The first two games, you can't sit back and say, oh, now we are going to have to go back into Boston for a game seven because we lost two in a row without Jason Tatum, their most important player. Like, I don't think the Knicks are I don't think a team led by Jalen Brunson and sort of that you know, Tibbs DNA of that team is going to let that happen. I could be wrong. I could be giving them too much credit. And like I said, I would not be surprised if the Celtics did go in and win. And again, with the Celtics, it's very, very dependent on how well they shoot the three and the variance. Like, if they can generate 3-point shots and they're just going down, they're almost impossible to beat. But aside from a scenario like that, I do expect the Knicks to take care of business. You know, we're talking about this, but by the time you guys are all listening, this will be decided. We'll see who's right here in the end. Who's the real big dog? But I mean, I'm rooting for the Knicks to do it and get this over with. Because again, like, the Celtics, sure, they could make it out of this round and go into the next. But like, I don't, ultimately, I don't think they have a chance of winning the title without Tatum. I would rather I'd rather the Knicks get, you know, further than they've ever been and just see that whole scene. Like, it's kind of annoying, or not annoying, but it's too bad that the Tatum injury happened at all. Like, it's awful. Like, it's just, this is the guy who deserves it the least too, because he's always fucking available. Like, I find Jason Tatum kind of corny and annoying, sure, like a lot of people, but I respect the hell out of him, like I do for Russell Westbrook and guys like that, who just play. Like, they go out there and play. He puts it on the line. He's one of the most talented young guys we have in the league. Just coming into his prime as well, that's what makes it so just, it just sucks. It's like Brandon Roy, Derrick Rose, those type of situations where it's like, fuck, what could have been in this next year and a half? And is he going to come back to be, you know, fully himself? I hope to God, you know, I think every NBA fan is hoping that that's true. But like, the Celtics aren't getting all the way to the title. You know, they're not getting to the finals and repeating without him. So I'd rather, you know, we see a new team make it, because all of that that's happening with the Celtics shouldn't diminish the fact that the Knicks are at the precipice of something that they haven't done since, you know, pre-Obama, for God's sake, which feels, you know, just forever ago. And them and those Bing Bong fans deserve that as well. So I hope they get it done. We'll see. I do agree with you. I don't fully trust them, but I'm trying to will it, you know, forward a little bit here. But yeah, it's going to be crazy though. Timothée Chalamet is going to be there with at least one Kardashian.
Leave Kendall at home.
Yeah,
Kylie, yeah. Whatever one. I don't know. They all look the same.
I think they were both there at one point, but
90% plastic and silicone. but they, I, as a fan, I would way rather see the Knicks versus Pacers, see that that rematch? Historic rivalry there from the late 90s, early 2000s. It'll be a lot more interesting. And like you said, two teams haven't been to the finals in four fucking ever. You know, and just a fresh team, because I don't think that, when was the last time we saw a finals representative from the East that wasn't the Bucks, the Heat, or the Celtics? 2019 with the Raptors?
Yeah, the Raptors, and then before that,
because 2010 was the Cleveland. 2020 was the Heat.
And then Cleveland before that.
Yeah. But yeah, since then, it's just been Miami, Milwaukee, Boston.
Yeah.
Five straight years, almost 6 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, the change is needed. A little change in the setting there. But yeah, I guess mostly it's been Boston. But moving on to, you know, we'll see if, again, if you see an episode come up on Monday, it'll be because that series is wrapped up. Conference finals are ready to be previewed. If it goes to game 7, we will record and release it on Tuesday. So that way we can, you know, give you guys the full recaps and accurate representations instead of having an episode just based on speculation. So
yeah, which is what this one is sort of, but you love it anyway. Yeah,
I'm getting this out in the afternoon, early afternoon, Jordan. So if you're listening to this, you're a real true diehard Big Dog Ball Talk fan.
Yeah,
you're a real pup. You're a diehard member of the dog pound. moving on, Jordan, we got two series that have wrapped up. Let's start with the Western Conference. This one is it's done with. We're very happy to see it. Fuck the Warriors. The Minnesota Timberwolves punching their ticket, back-to-back seasons, making the conference finals. I got to say it, man. I don't think that anybody would have predicted it, but I actually
you
think
did.
That the argument is made. Well, I mean, I did. I mean, I had them to make the conference finals. I also had them to make it to the win finals. The finals. Preseason.
Well, it's still very much possible, Matt. I mean, look how things are playing out. Like, it's not impossible at all.
No, I've
you place a futures bet on that? Do you put your money where your mouth was?
I put $100 on the Timberwolves before the season started. Pays out $1,000.
Are you serious? Wait, that's it?
100%. That was all it was at the time. If I had done it like a couple months after, when their odds had plummeted, when they were barely in the playoffs, I probably could have got it for like $5,000. But this was a when they were still in like the top six or seven of the odds games. But yeah, I mean, I'll take $1,000 if they can pull it off. But the Timberwolves getting the edge over the Warriors, and I gotta say it, man. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people would have agreed with me coming into this, but I think at this point, I can't think of another duo that is better than Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle so far. Like, honestly, is that not insane to think that Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards are the best duo in the playoffs? But I think it's fact.
I agree, Julius Randle, like. I actually can't believe this is happening.
He's fucking awesome.
I can't even say anything bad about how he's played. He's been great. And you know what? Mm-hmm. He's been put I think, again, people have been pointing this out, is that like when we last saw him actually playing in the playoffs for New York, he kind of was the man. Now he's in the perfect spot as that secondary guy. No one has any delusions that, including Julius Randle, that he should be sort of the number one guy on a team. And he's fallen into that role perfectly. I can't fault him.
Yep. And this game was, again, a perfect example of that. I mean, they rode their stars hard throughout this one. You know, Randall had 29-8-5. Ant had 22-7-12. Like, they are just perfectly clicking and peaking at the right time. You know, you had DiVincenzo and Naz Reid doing their thing off the bench. Mike Conley had one of his best games in the playoffs, really, of the season, 16-6-8. And then, of course, you got Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert holding it down defensively. Like, this is a Timberwolves team that, you know, coming into the season, and even like I said, I foresaw them getting to the conference finals. Like, they are so much better than what your average sixth seed is in the NBA.
Yep.
Like, if they were in the Eastern Conference, they would be like the 2 or 3 seed. Like, that's how good they are.
And I think they would beat either New York or Indiana or this version of the Celtics, to be honest, if it was like a conference playoff situation. But 100%.
Yeah, it's they're a really good fucking team, and I think they just kind of showed this. Like, they beat the Lakers in 5 dominantly. They beat the Warriors dominantly in 5. I love the moniker of the Legend Killer for Anthony Edwards. Shout out to any wrestling fans out there for
and Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert. Oh, sorry, you go first, Matt.
Oh, I was just gonna say that was Randy Orton's nickname when he was getting started. But he's put out Steph and Jimmy. He's put out Draymond. He's put out KD, he's put out LeBron.
All his favorite guys.
He's taking in all these old heads. He's the new new sheriff in town.
But Rudy Gobert is taking out everyone who's ever wronged him. He got Luka, and then he got Draymond, and now again, people have been trying to figure out. Like, I don't know who he's had the most run-ins, you know, between Nuggets or Thunder players, but there's got to be someone. He's not messing around. Rudy Gobert is
probably Jokic. Probably Jokic, just because he's cooked him so many times.
Yeah. So yeah, hopefully we get to see that. Actually, that is what I wanted to say quickly that I didn't touch on in the Nuggets series. Part of the reason I want the Nuggets to win is to see this Nuggets Timberwolves rematch. How fun would that be?
Yeah, that would be awesome. A lot better storyline for sure. To even move on from a little bit from the Timberwolves there, because like we said, I think we both had the Timberwolves to win in this series. Warriors going forward. I mean, again, I also want to, you know, put the quotations here, kind of like we were talking about with Jason Tatum, and that's Celtics Knicks series, not having Steph Curry for essentially the entire series. Definitely hurt. There's no dancing around that. They were pretty dominant in game one when he was able to play, and he really was only out there for the first half, and then, you know, wasn't able to come back in time to try and salvage this, you know, the series. I still think the Timberwolves would have won, but I could have seen this, you know, I think it probably would have went 6, maybe even 7, just because Steph is that good. He can change the entire complexion of a series like that. But then it kind of brings me to, you know, what we kind of were afraid of when this Jimmy Butler trade initially happened. So now you're coming into an offseason where you're tied up to Steph Curry on the wrong side of 35, Jimmy Butler 35, Draymond Green over 30. Like, all your big guys are all making tons of money, and they're old. Like, some of these guys aren't even going to be in the league in the next 2 seasons. Like, Steph Curry's already talked about how he's planning on retiring very soon.
Yep.
And then it's like, okay, well, are you going to re-sign Kuminga, who really came on and was like, are you your best player? No, and that's the thing. And they really seem to hate him there. They'll probably sign him and trade him and try and get something out of him from that. But, like, the Warriors are just in a horrible way right now. And, you know, for how they kind of overexceeded some expectations, like, I think this just highlighted all of their shortcomings for everything that they have, and that this was, like, their last real kick at the can. I think we're really approaching the point where the Warriors are in full rebuild mode and things are going to be blown up, because – you know, Moses Moody, you had a better season than you. Like, this was your best season of your career. You're a role player. And that's not disrespectful. Like, that's a fact.
Yep.
Podziemski, same thing. Like, you're solid. You can probably be a starter on most teams. But are you a guy that you're going to build around or have a top three consisting of? No, you're not. And then that's really all they've got. Like, everyone else is just like straight up. Like, you are a bench player. And I like Jimmy Butler, again, is too old. Like, you look at him now. 17-6-6, 4-for-11 shooting in a, you know, elimination game. It's just, he's not the same guy. None of these guys are the same guys that they were, like Steph and Draymond and, you know, in the past. It's done. It's wrapped up. And they're going out sad, if I'm being honest, like most of these guys do. And that's just Father Time catching up to them. So RIP to the Warriors, because, these next couple of years are going to be ugly.
Well, you know who they could use, Matt? Here's who I think they could use. Like a not super young, but like, still in their 20s, wing player who could defend a little bit, shoot a little bit, get to the rim. Someone like Andrew Wiggins, what's he doing?
Right? Right.
Someone who, you know, he's not that old, but he's also not too young where you don't feel like you can trust him. Maybe they should look into him. The whole two timelines thing has already been thrown out the window. We know it doesn't work, or in this situation hasn't really worked. You talk about Pajemski, like he was by far the leading scorer in this game. Well, he had 28, Kuminga had 26 off the bench, but the Kuminga always plays well when, first of all, the Warriors lose, and when just someone's not in the lineup. That's when he plays well. He never plays well when
it's the only reason he even got put in this.
100%. So, you know, throw that out the window a little bit. Pajemski, clearly Steve Kerr trusts, and he's out there in the big moments. I think that's sort of the one lone young bright spot on this team. So, you know, hopefully you get a step from him next year. But like the Kuminga thing, they've got to figure out. You have to get him off this team. I don't care how you do it. Like, even if you just fucking send him home, if he just wasn't on this team and you got nothing back from him, I think you'd have like addition by subtraction. It would be like just a weight off the shoulders of this organization who's like, oh, how and when do we play this guy? Can we get Steve Kerr to trust him enough to get out there? Oh, look, he had a 30-point game. Like, clearly the bridges have been burnt. You got to move on. Hopefully get something back from him. But then I'm thinking of like how to team build here. And it is difficult because, again, you don't want to replace him with another young, inexperienced guy who Steve Kerr also won't play. But you need younger blood in this locker room. So you need like half proven guys in like their mid to towards late 20s who still have some athletic juice and are actually valued. Those guys are fucking hard to get. Like, those guys are guys that usually other teams want to hang on to. And you don't really have that many trade chips if you're the Warriors. Like, I don't think that many people are going to, like, people who know the situation aren't going to give you that much for Kuminga in a side and trade situation, however they decide to sort of try and deal him. I agree. They're in a really tough spot. I don't know what they do because I think it would be the wrong move to be like, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go get Vucevic and then we're going to go all in on like this version of an old aging starting five. Like, we've seen that before. It doesn't work. Like when the fucking Lakers tried to do it with Nash and Dwight and Powell and Kobe, like all these other fucking examples
KG,
of this.
Paul Pierce, KG, Brooklyn Nets.
The Brooklyn. Yeah. So like all these things, you try and put together these guys who are not quite in their prime anymore. And you expect them to
borderline James Harden, Kyrie, Kevin Durant.
Yeah. True. I mean, that looked like it was working for a bit. And then injuries obviously, hurt it there. But I mean, again, that's the other risk you run when you put together these old teams. Steph Curry, obviously they're going home now. They lost a series in five because he got hurt. And it's like, that could happen with Jimmy Butler next year. And that could happen with Draymond next year too, the year after that, whatever it is. So they have to inject some youth, but again, it's not that simple. They have youth on this team. They're just not good enough to play in the Warriors system. But then the whole Warriors system players are quite old and they're just not good enough anymore. And it's like at some point you have to say, okay, we're going to have to move on. I know it's hard to do that when you have a player like Steph Curry, who when he's been healthy this year has still looked absolutely incredible. But it's getting harder and harder to imagine a scenario where they win another championship, and that's clearly still the goal. And they just traded for Jimmy Butler and gave him, the contract extension that he wanted. So fuck, I don't know what you do. But it's gotta be, you gotta hope and pray that it's Kuminga going out and some pieces coming in, and maybe, I don't know if they've got the mid-level or what they can do to sign a guy who, another team has soured on, but who has some fucking fresh legs so you can bring in, and hopefully fold into the system. But it's hard to find quote unquote Warriors guys like that. It's not, they're not just floating around. And if Steve Kerr doesn't feel comfortable playing them within that sort of ecosystem, it goes bad, like we've seen so many other times. So you're trying to fucking thread the needle here. It might not be possible in the end. So, we'll see. But like you said in the intro, I am not going to feel bad about the Warriors having a tough time. They had their moment in the sun.
Long time coming.
Yeah, go ahead. Fade away.
Just to kick them while they're down, they still end up going on to win a title after this. So, I mean, it's not like it was the end of the world, but it is crazy in hindsight, you know, as we're continuing to talk about how they have this lack of depth and lack of, you know, young core to try and build around. They could have had LaMelo Ball. They could have had Denny Avdija. Yep. They could have had Tyrese Haliburton. They could have had Tyrese Maxey. They could have had Emmanuel Quickley, Peyton Pritchard, Jaden McDaniels, Desmond Bane, so many guys in that 2020 draft that, you know, all kind of fell, you know, at some point in the draft there. Some of those guys were obviously not even projected to go top five, top 10. It's just crazy. Like they drafting James Wiseman seemed like the right pick at the time.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, the thing is, you can say all that and it's true, but I thought that was a really smart pick to take Wiseman.
Oh, yeah, same here.
And it just didn't work out. James
Wiseman truther forever.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, this is how things go. That's the situation they're in now.
I mean, hell, if they had even gotten, you know, Patrick Williams, Onyeka Okongwu, Obi Toppin, like there were Devin Vassell for even like
anybody's better than Wiseman.
Beef Stew. Like there are so many. Aaron Naismith. There were so many guys.
You want Beef Stew and Draymond on one team?
That would have been people always want to say the bad boy Pistons were back this year. You imagine those two?
They would kill someone. Nurkic would be dead, I think. By now.
Yes. Rudy would be 100% dead. They'd all be gone.
So you get Draymond would put him in a chokehold, and then Beef Stew would come and just drop on.
throwing the uppercuts.
Yeah.
But yeah, RIP to the Warriors, and congratulations to the Timberwolves punching their ticket there in the Western Conference. And also, now to talk about it, waiting in the wings in the East in the conference finals for their back to back seasons as well. We've got the Indiana Pacers, Jordan, maybe the biggest surprise of this playoff so far, taking down the Cavs in five games, something that neither of us saw coming whatsoever. We thought this was going to be I believe I actually almost went Cavs in five. I think I ended up hesitating and going Cavs in six.
And I went Cavs in seven, but still wrong.
Yeah, that is, it's crazy that the Pacers were this good and this dominant against a Cavs team that for the most part was healthy throughout this series. Like, it wasn't any kind of craziness. Like, obviously that game two with Mobley and Garland.
And everyone was hobbled, I guess, but they're playing. They missed a game. It was just one game, really, where all those guys were out.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, we talked about it a little bit in the last podcast as, you know, they had mounted this this lead in the series. Like, the Cavs just, you know, like we said, they were a little hobbled, but still out there. But the Pacers' depth and energy level is just so unmatched. Like, I was saying the Knicks don't have that killer instinct. The Pacers, you know, what they maybe lack in overall talent, they want to be there and they want to win. Like, this is
different from last year. They've clearly took a step forward from last year because they played with their food with the Bucks, and then we saw what they did with the Knicks, even, who were on one leg. They obviously win, but that took game seven. And then what they did with the Celtics. So yeah, I 100% agree that they have that killer instinct now, but it's just a complete jump from last year, which, you know, credit to them.
Yep. But again, that's a mental fortitude that you have to pick up throughout, you know, these battles and these tests. And, you know, we've seen lots of teams that go through that and don't learn from it. So I think that's a super promising, you know, aspect to look into there for the Pacers and their fans. You know, and then in this one especially, like, I just felt like watching that game five, like, the Cavs just, you know, like, while there's no quit in Indiana, the Cavs were so okay to just kind of roll over. Like, in what world do the Pacers just start dominating you in the paint in the second half? Like, Evan Mobley is the defensive player of the year, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know about
two
that.
Two blocks. He looked bad. He was exposed. Jared Allen, I mean, another bad award. Big dog of the year. That looks horrible.
They might need to trade him.
Yeah, four rebounds in this one. Like, and then Darius Garland, 4 for 16. Like, I know he kind of was rushed back a little bit, but, like, outside of Donovan Mitchell, and, like, Evan Mobley was good offensively. Defensively, you know, had his shortcomings. But outside of Mitchell and Mobley, everybody else can be moved. Everyone else is expendable. And I think that the writing is on the wall. You know, you had an amazing regular season, and you still couldn't get to the conference finals. You got to make a consolidation trade this season. It has to happen. I think Garland and Allen, you get a package, send them anywhere. Maybe you split the two up. I don't know. But there's going to be a destination for them. And the one I was looking at, man, you could trade Jared Allen, Darius Garland, and 2027, I believe it is, first round pick. Maybe you think the Bucks would bite on that for Giannis?
Oh, you said
he wants to stay in the East, apparently. Garland and Allen. So you're getting two all-star players. You don't have Dame for most of the season, likely. So you'll have Garland, Allen, Portis, And then whatever kind of wings you can drum up. I mean, that's not the worst way to, you know, speed up a bit of a rebuild.
No, no, I don't hate that. I mean, if you, depending on what the Bucks are after, if they really, really want draft picks more than anything, you know, I'm not off the top of my head remembering if Cleveland has any supplemental stuff
I think they have a lot of pick swaps as well, that they don't even have, like they have the worst end of a lot of pick swaps. Like ones with, I want to say one's with Utah and one is with San Antonio or something. I don't know. I don't think they're going to age well. I'll say that.
Yeah, but if you are thinking like, okay, we're a small market, we actually more so want to do a bit of retooling, like Darius Garland is a good ass player. I know he's had really bad luck with injuries now these last 2 years, sort of, you know, going from the regular season and into the playoffs. But when he's right, especially a lot of last, or, you know, this past regular season, like he was just great, and he's still young. And Jared Allen's still a serviceable center. Like he's been really good as well for the most part. Again, his playoff resume is starting to get pretty shaky here. And as a guy, like, can he be on the floor in these moments? That's still, you know, a question I think is going to be asked more and more. But as a guy to get you regular season wins, anchor your defense, he's a great option. So yeah, I like, but it's funny to think about it. You're talking about this now. This is the sort of way that we were thinking about the Cavs going into this year before we knew that they would win 64 games, whatever they won, and be this incredible team start to finish, start the season 15-0 or whatever they did.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, this is how we were talking about them as this team that maybe like those four aren't really going to work. Like we know,
we never stop saying that we'll believe in them when we see it. Exactly. We never stopped even when we previewed this series, we said, we still don't trust them.
Exactly. And sure, you can blame the injuries. Yes. Injuries always play a factor, but like you can't change what the results are. Like that's what we were thinking. Yep. And these are the results. And it's like, it's so funny that the roundabout way that we've come to this exact conversation, which I would have predicted we were having at the start of the season. It was just before they looked 100%. Like an insanely dominant team where it kind of swayed your opinion. But, you know, it kind of came back around to the exact same spot. I mean, they lost in 5 games, right? I'm not misremembering a win there.
Against the Celtics? Yeah.
This year just now against the...
oh, yeah, it was five games, It was 5 games last year as well.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like they got no further last year than this year. And think about how we talked about them.
I may have to fact check that. They may have got swept.
In this series that just got played? No, they won the one.
Against the Celtics. They won
a game against the Celtics. Okay, so I'm remembering.
Back five. But no, this was 5 games.
Yeah, so it's like, it's just crazy. I know no one predicted this, including us. And again, I understand. If injuries were not a factor in this one, it would probably be different. They could well have won this series.
They choked that game too. They had it in the bag and they blew it.
Yeah. And game one, they let the Pacers come in and beat them in game one. Like if they had taken care of business in that one, maybe game two wouldn't have been, such an issue as well. So it's like,
they lost 3 games at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in a 5-game series.
And even in the game five, they were up like 19 points or something. The Pacers came all the way back in that one, like midway through the game, and then closed it out to end their fucking season. Like the issues go deeper than just the injuries. And I think that's plain to see. You talk about what a team does in terms of building. Like, yeah, like if they can sniff around Giannis, guys like that, like, you know, even Kevin Durant, can you maybe get in on that a little bit? Like, I don't know if I would do that for a guy who's so old.
You could probably find something for a Jared Allen trade. I don't know. You can maybe make that work.
Yeah.
I don't think they want Garland. I don't think they need more guards. But
yeah, true. I agree. They got to move at least one of those guys. Like I heard people like, I think that on Zach Lowe on his podcast, talking about like, oh, don't overreact to this if you're Cleveland because, of all the extenuating circumstances. I would say don't underreact to it either. Don't act like 100%. Everything's fine and just run it back. Like I would say at least trade one of those guys and filter some new blood in.
With this core. It's been proven. It's not, you're not winning. Like this Pacers team is good, but they're not that good.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. They've clearly got like enough of a base formula, but I agree with your determination that really is just the, mostly that's Mobley and Donovan Mitchell, and everything else outside of that. If you've got the Kenny Atkinson system, you know, still working, you get some good shooters out there, maybe some better defenders, honestly, then you can still sort of recreate that great regular season team, but maybe build yourself up a little bit more to be successful in the playoffs, because that's the name of the game.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on the Cavs into the offseason, and yeah, shout outs to the Pacers for
they're good.
Finding their way back.
We put
into
that
the,
dark horse
conference
title
finals
on them a little bit. I thought maybe that's a bit much, but that sounds like a good call now. That was back in the regular season.
Yeah, they're proving us wrong. The Pascal Siakam Hall of Fame tour continues.
Let's go,
I don't
baby.
Know. I was interacting with some people on the Big Dog Ball Talk Twitter account. I think it was Chris Walder, who's a Raptors.
You're interacting
reporter
with this man?
Oh yeah, Chris? Yeah. I replied to his tweet, and some other people liked it.
Okay.
He said he posted a whole thing, all of his accolades, and was like, sneakily a Hall of Fame career. And I said, but we've been saying that for a couple months already.
Him
so,
and Kyle Lowry, who is a no-brainer, by the way, in case
wants
to fight me on that. We've got a few Raptors have got to get in there for sure. More recent Raptors,
100%. Yes. I think that DeMar. Well, that's probably a tougher argument. But individual stats are good.
Yes, he's gonna. Yeah, he's
worst
gonna
guys,
end pretty
worst
high
guys
up on
fame.
the all time scorers list if he keeps playing, because he's been putting up points.
Well, he's top 20 already, isn't he?
Yeah. I think some around there. So yeah, he's got a case.
I think he broke into it. Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on everyone's Hall of Fame careers as well. Before we get into it, Jordan, as we preview. Maybe a potential Hall of Fame career. That's what people are thinking that this guy could have in store for him. Cooper Flagg and the rest of the 2025 draft class.
We stopped recording like 10 minutes before this all happened on Monday or whatever it was. Crazy.
Yeah, pretty much. But our dry run, hand up. Sorry, guys. Our simulator must have been bugging out. Portland went backwards, not all the way up to the first pick. But we did we did preview. We got you guys ready for a crazy upset, because I think we had a bunch of major moves in that one. I know Portland ended up going up. I think we might have had Dallas going up too. I don't remember. But unfortunately, the Sixers ended up getting their pick. That was one of the only things we didn't want to see happen. But in the craziest twist of fate, the greatest soap opera in the world, the Dallas Mavericks with a 1.8% chance to get the first overall pick after they sold Lucas Sol to the devil,
stupid,
that is Adam Silver. They now have the first overall pick and the rights to draft Cooper Flagg and add him to a team with Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis. It's crazy, man, that this stuff happens, and we should actually finally do it this offseason and do a whole podcast, like an hour and a half, just talking about NBA conspiracies, because this one's up there that they traded Luka for essentially the rigging of this year's draft, which it's hard to argue when the same thing happened when the Pelicans traded Anthony Davis to the Lakers. They got the first overall pick that year as well. The precedent has been set that if you make these deals, then they will help. They will reward you. And here we are. The Mavericks, Nico could go so crazy and just take like Ace Bailey or something and say fuck this and shock the world. But all indicators are Cooper
Flagg
will
be the
number one.
I want a defensive player. Defense wins champion. I'm taking Malawach. Give me Malawach, baby.
Yeah. Not quite. That would be insane. But Cooper Flagg going to go to the Mavericks and be put right into a situation where they can win in his rookie year. I don't know if I would put a title contender tag on them.
Not with Kyrie out. If he's
well, and that's the thing for the first half of the season, and and then Klay Thompson. People are hyping that up, but we saw how he was this year. He's a starter, but he's not that great. But it's still a pretty good situation. Really, well regarded organization. The Mavericks fans have to have whiplash with how the season's gone for them.
Oh yeah, this is the craziest season, for a fan base that I can remember almost ever, because that trade was completely unprecedented. Nothing we'd seen nothing in our lifetimes that even comes close to that. To go from a team that made the play-in, I understand, it was a kind of uninspired sort of technicality based on the work, the great record they had sort of put together before the Luka trade that led them into that play-in spot there, in the end. Mm-hmm. But it's just crazy that they can go from potentially competing for a playoff appearance to getting the number one pick in the draft, coming down to a fucking coin flip. I forget if it was between them and the Bulls or something.
It was
to even
the Bulls,
put them in that position to even have the ping pong balls fall their way. It's just an unbelievable way that it turned out. Like, you can't even write it. No matter what, they've got to be at least relieved or happy or whatever. Like, I think people are still kind of mad about how the whole thing played out. But if you're getting the number one overall pick and such a you know, generational guy, potentially, you've got to feel good. But do you say, hey, look, Giannis over there, I know you want to stay in the Eastern Conference, but, you know, can we convince the Bucks to part with him and basically just, you know, not, hopefully not too much else, just salaries to make it match. And then we get Giannis in there and have a, you know, AD, Giannis, and Kyrie, big three, hopefully, if they can all be healthy at the same time. You're getting into maybe a bit of a risky situation there because those are three guys with a pretty long and rich injury history, and mm-hmm. the odds of them all coming together at once for a championship run, especially with the ages that they're all at this point, all on the other side of 30 at this point, that might be a bit risky. And you know, we've criticized the Warriors and other teams for doing things like that. But I think these three guys are on such a high level and would fit together in such a nice way, I think, that maybe you could talk yourself into doing it. Because, like, the weird thing for the Mavericks is, other than Derek Lively, like, they don't really have that many young guys on that team that are fully on Cooper Flagg's timeline. They just made a win now move to get Anthony Davis, trading Luka Doncic, the fucking savior of that city, the guy that just took them to a finals. So, like, now switching to Cooper Flagg is a bit of a weird sort of timeline jump. Luckily, Cooper looks like one of those prospects that could possibly come in and make a difference like right away in his rookie year, but you can't count on that. So I'm very, very curious to see what they do, what moves they make. Like, even like guys like Daniel Gafford, you don't really need him around at this point. And I forget if he's got a player option, team option, or what it is, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gets moved. Do the Mavericks sort of shift a little bit younger or try and get some more assets to eventually pair with Cooper down the line, whether that's picks or what. So they've got a lot of decisions to make, but the possibility of having a Giannis AD front court with Kyrie in the back there and then filling out the team from there is somewhat tempting for me. So I wouldn't rule that out. But it's, you know, worst case, you get Cooper Flagg and you just sort of go with it and see what happens. That's a pretty incredible position to be in after the season that the Mavs have had.
Well, it's also funny to me that it's like everyone wants to throw out the conspiracy theory, you know, allegations when the fucking Hawks did the exact same thing last year.
Yes.
No one said shit. They just went, oh, that's kind of crazy that happened.
Because it was Risa Shea. They didn't get anyone that good.
A fuck. Yeah. But yeah, you're talking about trades there for Giannis or just moving these top picks. Another team that jumped up that it's fucking insanely unfair that they were able to do this. But the San Antonio Spurs getting the number two pick. That's the juicy one, man. I think that's the one that people have their eyes on right now that could be moved. Because again, they don't really need guards. They've got plenty of guard depth. They don't really like with the second pick, do you really want to go Ace Bailey? He's a bit of a project.
Yep.
They could trade that second overall pick to the Bucks for Giannis and, you know, throw in a couple other people. You could throw in Chris Paul, for God's sakes. And you could have De'Aaron Fox, Wemby, and Giannis.
Don't throw in Chris. If you throw in Chris Paul and he misses out on another ring, I'm going to freak out. Please keep Chris. Yes.
But that would be a nasty big three, man. Like, and they're still young enough. Like, oh, obviously Wemby, but I mean, De'Aaron Fox is in a good spot of his career. Giannis is, you know, right in his prime. Like, that would be disgusting to see. But the Spurs, also, you know, even if they wanted to keep their pick and they take Dylan Harper or Ace Bailey, which, you know, we'll see what they end up kind of doing with that. Like, they're still getting really highly touted prospects in their own right. Like, both those guys could have been number one overall picks if there wasn't a guy named Cooper Flagg in this year's draft. So it's crazy to see. And then, the other team that jumped up, the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, they got really, really lucky in getting able to, you know, keep their first round pick. And even luckier that they were able to slot into the top three. So, you know, the Sixers, you know, where we really aren't sure what the hell Joel Embiid's career is going to look like or Paul George from here. But maybe they can actually find somebody between, you know, Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey to pair with Tyrese Maxey into the future. And, you know, we'll see if the 76ers can kind of rebuild a little bit from there.
Yeah. They've got an interesting decision to make as well, because it's like interesting timelines or more complicated timelines at this point with, you know, Paul George and Embiid and what's going to happen, what he's going to look like when he comes back, and just sort of where you go from there. I mean, we just talked about the Warriors and the two timeline thing. Like, it's kind of hard. Historically, you do better when you lean harder into one direction versus trying to do both. You know, it's a much harder line to walk. The Spurs thing. Yeah, I agree. Giannis, that's where Giannis sort of makes the most sense in terms of what can be given up and the needs of that team. And Giannis being able to go to a team that's not completely gutted by the trade needed to acquire him. You know, if you have that second overall pick, that's a good way for the Bucks to sort of reset, like you said. But then, fuck, if Giannis goes from the East to the West, the Raptors could be the second seed next year. If Tatum's out it's just the East is going to be so just decimated if Giannis does move over there to the Spurs or another West team. So
then they just got to make that rule change on the fly in the offseason and just do top 16 teams because it'll be a joke just, these playoffs.
Like fucking Charlotte will make the playoffs. Pretty crazy. So, you know, we will see. Still rooting for the Raptors to get in on that. That was a story in the last couple of days. The Raptors, not great for them in the lottery, but apparently the Toronto came up as a team that Giannis would be potentially okay going to stand in the East. So
them and Brooklyn.
Keep an eye on that. But the lottery, this is one of the craziest ones in a while. There's a lot of teams because that's what happens when the teams that tanked like fucking hell, like Washington and these other teams that are
the Jazz. Young and,
the Jazz.
The bottom two teams in the league drop past the top four.
Yeah, and so when those teams don't get the highest picks and the teams like Dallas and fucking Philly get them, you get these weird sort of situations where you can go a lot of different ways with it. So, we'll see. But that was a crazy one.
Well, let us know what you guys thought of the crazy NBA draft lottery and who you want your team to take in the first round. We will be talking about our upcoming draft preview as well once the season wraps up. I'm actually already starting my my prospect scouting, Jordan. I'm going in depth. I'm scouting like 100 guys this year. I'm taking notes. I'm going to come in prepared. And I've already got some hot takes. I've only run through about 20 guys. So be on the lookout for that. Give us a follow at Big Gumball Talk. X, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all the old heads out there. Give us a follow. Help us, help you, help us. And until then, Jordan, we will talk to them again Monday or Tuesday. Stay tuned to see how that Game 6 plays out between the Knicks and the Celtics. If the season
Let's
wraps up,
Bing
or the series wraps up, we will see you guys on Monday. If not, we will talk to you on Tuesday after that Game 7 finishes up. But until then, this has been Bit Up. I'll talk about it. Go Jordan Fickle. As my good friend Jordan always says.
Look at this, Matt. Look at that. You see that?
Oh, fuck.
You see that crest?
This is Matt, it, man.
I've been in a coma for 3 days. The Leafs won game five, right? The Leafs dominated in game five.
Yeah. We're going back. We can close it out tonight. My whole analogy of the Knicks and the Maple Leafs being interlinked quickly fell out the window after releasing the podcast. So
yes.
It looked cool for a minute.
So wait, but does that mean that if the Knicks win, the Leafs won't? Or can they? How does this work now, Matt?
Has it switched? I don't know. This is confusing to me too, man. Games are going on at the same time, so I guess we'll find out.
We will find out. Last time I asked the Pope to say a prayer for the Knicks, please send one for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. Yeah. Please, God.
Everyone get the Ouija board out and pray to Rob Ford for one more Leafs win. Let us do a Game 7. Give us a chance.
Save us, Rob. Save us.